Our second text this morning comes from James chapter 3, verses 1 to 12, and we're continuing to make our way through the book of James. And this section is called Taming the Tongue. Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers and sisters, for you know that we who teach will be judged with greater strictness. For all of us make many mistakes, and anyone who makes no mistakes in speaking is perfect, able to keep the whole body in check with a bridle. If we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we guide their whole bodies. Or look at ships, though they are so large that it takes strong winds to drive them, yet they are guided by a very small rudder, wherever the will of the pilot directs. So also the tongue is a small member, and yet it boasts of great exploits. How a great forest is set ablaze by a small fire. And the tongue is a fire. The tongue is placed among our members as a world of iniquity. It stains the whole body, sets on fire the cycle of nature, and is itself set on fire by hell. For every species of beast and bird, of reptile and sea creature can be tamed and has been tamed by the human species, but no one can tame the tongue, a restless evil full of deadly poison. With it we bless the Lord and Father, and with it we curse those who are made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this ought not to be so. Does a spring pour forth from the same opening both fresh and brackish water? Can a fig tree, my brothers and sisters, yield olives or a grapevine figs? No more can salt water yield fresh water. The word of the Lord. This morning, I want to start with a story. And it's a story which my mom used to read to us as kids. It's written by a pastor and author whose name is Max Lucado. And the story is called, You Are Special. And I'm going to do my best to help you all see the pictures. Those of you who sat in the front, well played, you'll get a better view of the pictures. So the book is called, You Are Special. The Wemmicks were small wooden people. All of the wooden people were carved by a woodworker named Eli, and his workshop sat on a hill overlooking their village. Each Wemmick was different. Some had big noses, others had large eyes, some were tall and others were short, and some wore hats and others wore coats, but all were made by the same carver and all lived in the village. And all day, every day, the Wemmicks did the same thing. They gave each other stickers. Each Wemmick had a box of Golden Star stickers and a box of Gray Dot stickers. And up and down the streets, all over the city, people spent their days sticking stars or dots on one another. The pretty ones, those with smooth wood and fine paint, always got stars. But if the wood was rough or the paint chipped, the Wemmicks gave dots. The talented ones got stars, too. Some could lift big sticks high above their heads or jump over tall boxes, and still others knew big words or could sing pretty songs, and everyone gave them stars. Some Wemmicks had stars all over them. Every time they got a star, it made them feel so good. It made them want to do something else and get another star. And others, though they could do little, they got dots. Punchinello was one of these. He tried to jump high like the others, but he always fell, and when he fell, the others would gather around and give him dots. And sometimes when he fell, his wood got scratched, so people would give him more dots. And then he would try to explain why he fell, and he would say something silly, and the Wemmicks would give him more dots. And after a while, he had so many dots that he didn't even want to go outside. He was afraid he would say something or do something. He would do something dumb, then people would give him another dot. In fact, he had so many gray dots that some people would come up and give him one for no reason at all. He deserves a lot of dots, the wooden people would agree with one another. He is not a good wooden person. And after a while, Punchinello believed them. I'm not a good Wemmick, he would say. And the few times he went outside, he hung around other Wemmicks who also had a lot of dots, and he felt better around them. And one day, he met a Wemmick who was unlike any he'd ever met. She had no dots or stars, and she was just wooden, and her name was Lucia. And it wasn't that people didn't try to give her stickers, it's just that the stickers didn't stick. Some of the Wemmicks admired Lucia for having no dots, so they would run up and give her a star, but it would fall off. And others would look down on her for having no stars, so they would give her a dot, but it wouldn't stay either. That's the way I want to be, Punchinello, thought Punchinello. I don't want anyone's marks. And so he asked the stickerless Wemmick how she did it. It's easy, Lucia replied. Every day I go and see Eli. Eli? Yes, Eli, the woodcarver. I sit in the workshop with him. Why? Why don't you find out for yourself? Go up to the hill, he's there. And with that, the Wemmick, who had no stickers, turned and skipped away. But will he want to see me? Punchinello cried out. Lucia didn't hear. So Punchinello went home and he sat near a window and watched the wooden people as they scurried around, giving each other stars and dots. It's not right, he muttered to himself, and he decided to go and see Eli. And he walked up the narrow path to the top of the hill and stepped into the big shop. His wooden eyes widened at the size of everything. The stool was as tall as he was, and he had to stretch on his tiptoes to see the top of the workbench, and a hammer was as long as his arm, and Punchinello swallowed hard. Ooh, I'm not staying here. And he turned to leave, and then he heard his name. Punchinello? The voice was deep and strong, and Punchinello stopped. Punchinello, how good to see you. Come and let me have a look at you. And Punchinello turned slowly and looked at the large, bearded craftsman. You know my name? The little Wemmick asked. Of course I do. I made you. Eli stooped down and picked him up and set him on the bench. The maker spoke thoughtfully as he looked at the gray dots. Looks like you've been given some bad marks. I didn't mean to, Eli. I really tried hard. Oh, you don't have to defend yourself to me, child. I don't care what the other Wemmicks think. You don't? No, and you shouldn't either. Who are they to give stars or dots? They're Wemmicks just like you. What they think doesn't matter. Punchinello, all that matters is what I think. And I think you are pretty special. Punchinello laughed. Me? Special? Why? I can't walk fast. I can't jump. My paint is peeling. Why do I matter to you? Eli looked at Punchinello and put his hands on those small wooden shoulders and spoke very slowly. Because you're mine. That's why you matter to me. Punchinello had never had anyone look at him like this, much less his maker, and he didn't know what to say. Every day, I've been hoping you'd come, Eli explained. I came because I met someone who had no marks, said Punchinello. I know. She told me about you. Why don't the stickers stay on her? The maker spoke softly. Because she has decided that what I think is more important than what they think. The stickers only stick if you let them. What? The stickers only stick if they matter to you. And the more you trust my love, the less you care about their stickers. I'm not sure I understand. Eli smiled. You will, but it will take time. You've got a lot of marks. For now, just come to see me every day and let me remind you how much I care. And Eli lifted Punchinello off the bench and set him on the ground. "Remember," Eli said as the Wemmick walked out the door, "you are special because I made you. And I don't make mistakes." Punchinello didn't stop, but in his heart he thought, "I think he really means it." And when he did, a dot fell to the ground. The end. It's amazing the truth that can be captured in that little story. A truth that we all know, which is that words have incredible power. The power to build up and the power to tear down. The power to give life and the power to take life. And we learn this from an early age, don't we? I can remember in first grade, when I first learned the destructive power of words. So when I was in first grade, I had very large ears. Very large ears. So much so that people looked at me and thought I might flap away in a stiff breeze. And so one day, my highly intelligent first grade classmates made the connection between my ears and those of a classic Disney character, an elephant known as Dumbo. And one of the smart ones on the playground looked at me and said, "He looks like Dumbo. Let's call him Dumbo." "Oh, yeah, that's great." And everybody's laughing, and I am just wilting at this new word, this gray dot that's been taken and stuck right on me. Dumbo, the kid with the big ears, the kid who looks weird, the kid who doesn't fit in. And I carried that around for years. I wouldn't wear a hat because I was afraid it would push my ears out even farther. And I was afraid that I'd hear that name again. Years later, when I met my lovely wife, while we were dating, she came over to the house, and my mom was, of course, doing what mothers do, showing pictures of their sons. And when I was younger, and Allie saw this picture of me with the full ears on display, and her initial response was to laugh. And I felt that shame again, all those years later, that, something's wrong with me. Because we carry them around, don't we? We carry around those words, those things that people say to us. Nobody else sees them, but when we look in the mirror, right, we see all of them. And those dots have this long-lasting, slow-working poison that slowly sinks into our souls until we begin to believe those words. You're dumb, you're stupid, you're too fat, you're too slow, you're not smart enough, you're not as good as your brother, you're not this, you're not that. And if those words weren't enough, we live in a culture that yells at us every time we look at the TV or we're driving down the road at the billboards that says, "Look, if your friends and family don't tell you that you're not good enough, we will tell you that you're not good enough, so you'll buy our stuff and then still not feel good enough." And so wherever we turn, whenever we tune in, the world is telling us, "Oh, here's a gray dot for you and for you and for you. Why don't you own this label?" And we carry all of those things around. We say things like, "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me." And yet we know it's not true, right? We know that words have incredible, incredible power. And the thing is, as people who have received poison, as people who have been wounded by the words of others, we then take that same poison, we take that same hurt, that same woundedness, and we share it with others. Ooh, we can be so generous, right, with our words and the way we speak about other people who look different and think different, who might vote for a different political party. How quick we are to put dots and words and stigmatize people. And we just pass on this poison that we ourselves have received. In the infinitely wise words of Michael Scott from The Office, "Hurt people hurt people." And that's true. We who have been hurt, we have been wounded, turn around and we do exactly the same thing to other people. And we wonder, why does the cycle continue? Because we're throwing words around that have great power to damage. And James, in this book, is speaking to a community of believers who are in the midst of a congregational fight. And it's not just about the color of the carpet or one of those kind of little tiffs. This is like a full-on drag down. The congregation has been broken into two parties with two separate leaders, and they can barely be in the same room together to have worship. And probably the only reason they're together is because somebody said, look, James, the brother of Jesus, has written us a letter. You all better show up. And through the first two chapters, things are okay, and then the taming of the tongue begins. And suddenly people feel uncomfortable because they have been slandering and lambasting and backstabbing and gossiping about each other. And these are Christians. And yet all this kind of behavior is happening because James is talking to a very wounded community. And James says, look, you guys, it's going to take more than the old count to 10, take a deep breath technique to be able to control the words that are on the tip of your tongue. It's going to take more than just saying, oh, I'm going to walk away for a second, and I will come back once I've regained my composure. Because what James wants us to recognize is that the words that come out of us are a reflection of what is inside of us. And he says, this is a heart issue. Those words that just come off the tip of your tongue and you wish you could have them back, it's about the state of your heart and the state of your soul. And he says, the first thing you've got to do is recognize that you are wounded, that you are hurt, that you need help. Those who have gone through the therapy recognize that there's no point in trying to help somebody who doesn't recognize that they have a problem. James is saying the first thing we got to do is recognize that we all have a problem, that we carry around deep wounds from words that people have said, from things that people have said and spoken over us. And James says, admit it and own it and recognize that you need help. And then we can begin to deal with the deep heart issue. There is set before us the slow work of transformation. I love in the story where it says, it's going to take time for all of those little dots to fall off. And we know that to be true, right? It takes time for us to be transformed, to stop listening to the lies that are swirling all around us. For many of us, it'll take a lifetime to let go of some of the things that have been said and spoken to us. And James says, may you hear what God is speaking to you. Don't listen to all the other stuff. Don't listen to the noise. Listen to the words that God is speaking over you. Find your identity in those words. Because when God looks at you, he said, oh, I made you and I know you and I love you. Before you were even created, before the beginning of the world, I knew you and I loved you. I knit you together in your mother's womb. When I see you, you are the apple of my eye. I love you. I sent my own son to die for you. This is how much I love you. This is what God speaks to us. Words of life and words of love. But sometimes that song kind of gets lost in the background, right? We forget that that's how God sees us, and so we don't see ourselves that way. There was a father, and it was Saturday night, and he was out shopping. And he had his 18-month-old, and it had been one of those weeks that he was tired and exhausted, and the 18-month-old had not been sleeping through the night, and there wasn't food in the house, and the last thing he wanted to do on Saturday night was to be out shopping, and his son is throwing the mother of all temper tantrums. Parents, we've been there, right? And he hears everybody commenting along the edges, and he can see out of the corner of his eyes, what is wrong with that guy? Can he not get his kid in control? And, he tries the pacifier, spits it onto the floor. He tries, the toy, and it's thrown onto the floor, and the kid is grabbing things and knocking them off the shelves. It's like miniature Godzilla. And the dad just doesn't know what to do, and so finally he decides to sing to his son. And the son starts to calm down a little bit at the sound of his father's voice, and his dad sings through like the three nursery rhyme songs that he knows, and then he starts making it up. He's ad-libbing, he's freestyling, and he's not a singer, but he is singing. And he just begins to sing over his son. I love you. I love your smile. I love the way when I look at you, you remind me of your mother. I love your boldness and your bravery, how you're not afraid of anything. And he just begins to sing to his son, just speaking all the words, anything that comes to his mind to let his son know, you are loved, it's okay. And the son calms down and he relaxes as he's enveloped in this song of love that his father is singing over him. And finally, they get out of the grocery store, they check out, they make it to the car, and the boy is almost asleep. And as his dad is putting him into the car seat, his eyes are fluttering, but he opens them just for a second, and he looks at his dad, and he says, can you keep singing the song? And his dad said, yes, I'll keep singing the song. And he gets in the front seat, and he turns on the engine, they're driving home, and he just keeps singing, and the boy falls asleep to the sound of his father's voice, to the words of his father's love. And he knows that he is deeply loved. There's not a part of him that doesn't know that he is loved. That's the same thing that God does for us. He sings a song of love over each one of us, trying to push out and push back all of the other words and all of the other narratives. If only we could tune in and hear those words. Those words are the antidote to the poison that people spew all over us. And not just other people, but we say to ourselves, right? Because we begin to believe those words. And how are we supposed to love our neighbor as ourselves if we don't love ourselves? How are we supposed to be patient with our neighbor if we can't be patient with ourselves? How can we speak kind words to our neighbor if we can't speak kind words to ourselves? And James says the transformation, the shift, the healing in the heart begins when we start to listen and believe and trust the words of our infinitely loving God. And he says you can rest in those words and you can trust them in this life and for all of eternity. That is the invitation that he is giving to us. And the hope is that once we have received those words and we've received healing from the poison that's within each one of us, we then can turn around and we can love people and we can care for them and speak kind and compassionate words because we have received kind and compassionate words from Jesus. May we use our words to build each other up, to love each other. May we stop the cycle of sharing gray dots, whatever those words are that we've penciled in. And may we begin to listen to the words of God who loves us more than we can possibly imagine. The season of politics is upon us, is it not? We live in a country that is vastly divided. And the church has a unique space to inhabit, to model for our country, that it's possible to have real dialogue. It's possible to disagree with each other, but still love each other, to be in the same room with people who think and believe differently and yet still look at them and see somebody who is dearly loved by God and say, you know what, I may not understand you, I may not even like you right now, but I can still love you and I can still listen and treat you with dignity. My prayer for you and for me this week is that we would do that. May we be aware of the power of our words to bring life and also to bring destruction. And may we see ourselves the way God sees us. Let us pray. Lord, give us eyes to see and acknowledge our own woundedness. Lord, we ask that you would begin to bring healing. Help us to let go of the narratives, of the words that we have received that are so different from the words that you speak over us. Lord, help us to be a model of what it means to love ourselves and to love our neighbors. We ask this in Jesus' holy and precious name. Amen.